Walt Disney Pictures presents its all-new 29th full-length animated motion picture. Australia. Mysterious. Untamed. And for a young boy named Cody and his magnificent golden eagle, it was a world of adventure and discovery.
Higher!
Until...
I got her!
They met the villain McLeach.
That bird's gonna make me rich.
An evil trapper who threatens to separate them forever.
It's time you learned how to fish for crocs.
No!
But though hope is running out, a message is on the way. To the Rescue Aid Society.
There has been a kidnapping in Australia.
And two little heroes, Bernard and Bianca, are flying in.
Let's go for it!
It's the rescuers in the most dangerous mission ever.
We'll never make it!
Cinch up your seatbelts, mates.
Now, they're joining forces with their new friend Jake and his army of misguided mates.
Ah, Frank, give it a rest.
They're flying into action, riding into danger.
Missed.
In the most breathtaking rescue mission ever.
Hey, who killed the music?
Oops.
Yeah.
This holiday season, join Bernard, Bianca, Jake, and...
Wilbur!
In an adventure above the ordinary, in the land down under. Walt Disney Pictures, The Rescuers Down Under.
Throw another shrimp in a barbie, sports fans. Here we come!
And along with the rescuers, it's Mickey Mouse and Mickey Mouse.
Which one is which?
In the classic tale of the wealthy prince and the poor peasant who decided to switch places.
If my friends could see me now.
He's an imposter.
I'm the prince.
If they don't get crap.
This holiday season, join Donald Duck, Goofy, Pluto, and Mickey Mouse in his first new big screen appearance in almost 10 years. Walt Disney Pictures, The Prince and the Pauper. And the Rescuers Down Under, playing together at theaters everywhere.
Welcome, everyone, to the Land Down Under week here on Be Kind Rewind. This is your Disney Plus movie podcast. I, of course, am Dan Teets, and I am joined tonight
by Kyra Hawkins.
And we are here to talk sequel. This one is a sequel with two original characters. Everybody else either died or got written off or something. So, in case you didn't know, we are talking about the 1990, November the 16th, 1990, release called The Rescuers Down Under. It did only $47.4 million in the box office, which is $113.3 million today. I can honestly say I had never seen this movie before starting to watch it for this podcast.
Really?
I'm sorry. I'm letting my 90s folks down, obviously. So this is another one that you're very familiar with?
Kind of. I am pretty sure that I saw it in the theater when it came out. And it's... I know we had it on VHS, or we rented it probably if we didn't own it. So I saw it a lot more than I saw the original growing up.
Okay. So does it hold up for you? Let me go ahead and just drop that one right now.
I don't know. I had a really hard time getting into it. I was distracted by a couple things and like in the movie, well, external things, yes, but also like there were things in the movie itself that I was a little distracted by. So I don't know if I like love it now, but I still love the characters Bernard and Bianca.
Yeah, they're what kept me in it, or I probably would have turned it off. All right, so our synopsis, which as always comes to us care of Wikipedia, goes a little something like this. In the outback, a young boy named Cody, who saves various animals from poachers, rescues and befriends Marahute, a rare golden eagle, who shows Cody her nest and eggs and gives him one of her feathers. Cody later falls into an animal trap set by Percival C. McLeach, a local poacher who killed Marahute's mate and is wanted by the Australian Rangers, while rescuing a mouse who is the bait in the trap. Realizing Cody has Marahute's feather and must know her location, McLeach kidnaps the boy and throws his backpack into a float of crocodiles. The rangers find it and believe that Cody has been eaten. The rescued mouse hurries to an outpost, shortly after Cody's capture, from which a telegram is sent to the Rescue Aid Society headquarters in the UN, New York City. Bernard and Miss Bianca, the RAS's elite field agents, are assigned to the mission, interrupting Bernard's attempt to propose marriage to Bianca. They go to find Orville the albatross, who aided them before, and meet his brother Wilbur, who, despite the harsh winter conditions in the city, flies them to Australia. There, they meet Jake, a hopping mouse, who is the RAS's local regional operative. Jake becomes infatuated with Bianca and flirts with her, much to Bernard's dismay. He serves as their tour guide and protector in search of the boy. Wilbur accidentally bends his spinal column out of shape, trying to help them, so Jake sends him to the hospital, which is an old ambulance. Wilbur refuses to undergo surgery, but his back is straightened as he fights to escape the medical mice. He flies off in search of his friends. At McLeach's hideout, Cody is imprisoned with a number of captured animals after refusing to divulge Marahute's whereabouts. Cody attempts to free himself and the animals, but is thwarted by Joanna, McLeach's pet goanna. Realizing that protecting Marahute's eggs is Cody's weak spot, McLeach tricks Cody into thinking someone else has killed Marahute and releases him, knowing that Cody will go to her nest. Bernard, Bianca, and Jake arrive as McLeach departs in his half-track after Cody. The three hitch a ride on the vehicle and warn Cody upon arriving at the nest, but McLeach captures Cody, Marahute, Jake, and Bianca. McLeach then sends Joanna to eat Marahute's eggs, but Bernard has managed to trick her using egg-shaped stones. Wilbur arrives at the nest, and Bernard leaves Wilbur to sit on the real eggs while Bernard goes after McLeach. McLeach takes his captives to Crocodile Falls, a huge waterfall at the end of the river he threw Cody's backpack into. He ties Cody up and hangs him over the float of crocodiles, intent on feeding Cody to them to eliminate him as a witness. Bernard, riding a razorback pig he tamed using a horse whispering technique he learned from Jake, arrives and disables McLeach's vehicle before he can succeed. McLeach then attempts to shoot the rope holding Cody above the water, but Bernard tricks Joanna into crashing into McLeach, sending them both into the water. The crocodiles turn their attention to McLeach and Joanna. Behind them, Cody falls into the water as the damaged rope breaks. As Joanna flees to the bank, McLeach fends off and taunts the crocodiles, forgetting about the waterfall until it is too late. He tries to swim to shore, but is washed over the edge to his death. Bernard dives into the water and holds Cody long enough for Jake and Bianca to free Marahute, allowing the eagle to save Cody and Bernard just as they go over the waterfall. Bernard, desperate to prevent any further interruptions, finally proposes to Bianca. She immediately accepts, while Jake salutes him with newfound respect. Safe at last, the group departs for Cody's home. Meanwhile, Wilbur is still sitting on Marahute's eggs. They hatch, and one of the eggs bites him, to his dismay. The end. So, the first thing that caught me off guard with this movie was the fact that Cody talked to the animals and the animals talked back to him. I don't know if that was designed or if he was going to be a Dr. Doolittle analog, but that kind of pulled me out because I'm trying to remember if the little girl talked to animals in the original one.
I'm pretty sure she talked to Bernard and Bianca.
Yeah, but she didn't carry on full-blown conversations with golden eagles or kangaroos or...
Right. No, I don't think so.
All right. So at least I'm not losing my mind on that.
Now I'm like, did she? Now I feel like I need to check.
Well, I'm sure that one of our listeners will go back and watch it and will send us an email at bekindrewinddmp@gmail.com. So that way they can let us know.
I know she talked to them, but it was like it seemed like a new thing, like in the original movie.
Okay.
The little girl talked to them, but it was like she, I think, maybe was surprised that she could. I don't remember exactly, but that was one of the things that got me too. Like, he's talking to all of the animals, and they're all talking back. Not only that, but Cody is like the only character in this movie from Australia that doesn't have an Australian accent. His mom did, but he didn't, I don't think.
But it was mentioned that his dad wasn't there, so he might have been born in another country and moved to Australia.
That's fair. It's like one of those details that, like, maybe you're not supposed to notice, yeah. But I wish they would have, addressed it.
So, one of the other main characters was this huge, and I'm using huge with about 23 U's in it, Golden Eagle, that I honestly would have been more scared of than anything if I saw that thing in the wild.
Yeah. In my notes, I was so caught off guard by that I was like, the eagle is like the size of a Subaru, and then there's a little kid.
Yeah. And I was trying to figure out if they were playing with, like, the eagle was way too close, but no. She grabs him with her talon and somehow doesn't manage to rip his arms off. And leads him back to her, takes him back to her nest where there are three eggs, which are normal size eggs. So is she the last of her kind and the next generation is going to be small? Is that why the poacher was after this eagle?
Or
are we just picking at the movie way too much?
Don't know. Like, it would make sense to assume, like, that she's the last one, because, like, the, like, male eagle we know is dead, or we find out soon enough. And then there are the eggs, and it is a little strange. Like, eagle eggs are, I don't think they're that small, like, in real life. I mean, this is, like, not your average bird, I guess, but it's just, yeah, they look like so small compared to this massive, like, truck sized bird.
Yeah, that was that caught me off guard when he was like, oh, well, the Golden Eagle's in trouble, all right, well, let's go save her. And then, yeah, she's the size of, I mean, I wouldn't even say a Subaru, I'd say like a small bus.
Yeah. She's very big. I mean, she, like, at first it kind of looks like she's gonna hurt him, like, because she's scared, because she's in the trap or whatever, but then once she realizes he's a friend, it's like, oh, cool. She loved him.
And she actually doesn't speak English or Australian or anything. She just is her normal eagle.
Yeah, I noticed that. I was like, how come he can talk to all the other animals, but then this one, they just have, like, spoken interactions.
Yeah. So, I was waiting to find out who the baddie was, and as soon as I heard his voice, I heard Patton. And I'm like, well, that's George C. Scott. Yep. I want to know how much Walt Disney paid this man to play a poacher in a sequel that didn't make that much money. Or was he promised royalties from the movie? Because he has an unmistakable voice, just like Christopher Lloyd does. So,
I just, like, noticed, it took me a second, because I was like, well, we're not there yet, really, in the story, but, when Bernard and Bianca, like, get the alert to come rescue Cody, or, like, the mission or whatever, and they go to, like, get the bird and fly, I was, like, confused at first. Like, it says on the sign under new management, see Wilbur. But I didn't remember that Wilbur wasn't in the original movie right away. I had to, like, check, because I thought, that sounds like John Candy.
Mm-hmm.
He wasn't in the original, was he? I think I'd remember that. So I had to, like, go and verify for myself. And sure enough, it was John Candy. And no, he wasn't in the original. The original actor, Jim Jordan, maybe, had passed away after The Rescuers. So they replaced him with Wilbur, voiced by John Candy, which I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
I mean, not that Jim Jordan died, but... That they got John Candy, like, it just seemed like a good character for him.
Yeah. So, rewinding just a little bit, because another thing that threw me out of this was the fact that the first mouse in Australia finds out about the kidnapping, sends a telegraph. Mm-hmm. It goes from Australia to the Marshall Islands, Marshall Islands to Hawaii, Hawaii to L.A., L.A. to Denver, Denver to St. Louis, St. Louis to Chicago, Chicago to D.C., and D.C. to New York. Once it gets to Hawaii, it stops being a full-blown telegraph and changes into a computer transmit because it's the Hawaiian Air Force something or other that this was taking place in. So... my question is, how long after the first movie does this movie take place?
Oh, that's a good thought. Yeah, I wonder.
Because the first one was set in, well, the RAS was set in the United Nations, so is this one. But, so it's definitely after the 40s, because that's when the United Nations was established, but it doesn't say... that this was 30 years later, 40 years later, and now I'm trying to find the actual... because the original was in 77. So we're talking 13 years in Disney, or it's 13 years from the setup. And this was based on books that was... the original was actually based on books from the 50s.
Yeah, I'm trying to find, like... because I hadn't thought of this until you said it. But I can't find anything that, like, indicates when this is supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Now I'm confused.
So, we'll leave everyone to ponder on that. And if somebody could tell us what year this one was set in by doing a deep dive into Wikipedia or wherever you want to find it, please let us know. So, they get the alert... and we have all of the same mice coming in the middle of the night. The counselor from Canada comes in his pajamas, which was kind of funny. And then they start saying, well, we know who it is that we're going to send on this mission. It's Bianca and Bernard. And they're missing. Because, surprise, surprise, Bernard's going to propose to Bianca. And it only took 13 years in Disney time for him to work up the courage to pop the question, and of course, since this is a Disney movie, we know that can't go off without a hitch.
Yeah, I thought it was kind of cute how he keeps getting foiled, and then there's I guess it's kind of a trope of like where he thinks that they're talking about the same thing, but she's talking about the mission when he thinks that it's the proposal. Like sometimes when they do that in movies, it doesn't work, but I thought it worked here. It was cute.
And so their dinner gets cut short. They go back. They accept the mission, obviously. And they end up flying with Wilbur, who is John Candy. And I think the original proprietor was named Orville.
Yes.
So that was probably a Wright Brothers nod.
Yeah, I checked that out once I put it together confirming that it was, in fact, character. I was like, oh yeah, the Wright Brothers, and then it was somewhere on the internet that was intentional. Like, of course it is, it's so obvious.
And so Wilbur's thinking, oh, well, they're going on a nice little getaway, so we'll start planning it for them in the middle of the month, middle of April, whenever. And she's like, oh no, darling, we have to go tonight. And yes, that was my Eva Gabor impression. Very, very bad.
It was very good.
And, of course, they're in the middle of a snowstorm. And so hilarity ensues because Wilbur's not prepared to fly in the middle of snow. And so he goes out and gets them somewhere, and I don't think I wrote down where, because the next thing that we see is them on board an airplane, or maybe I just missed it, and Wilbur is sound asleep and has to be woke up to be told that it is time for them to descend into Australia.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because I think I missed this part. They were at his like airport or whatever, and then I like looked down, and then they were in Australia, and he was asleep like and upside down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was like, well, that was kind of fast.
Yeah, and so after that, they land in a hilarious way. Because Australia's airport for birds is not prepared for an albatross, and they have to let out both sides of the landing pad or whatever, and it's still not wide enough. And Jake keeps trying to call off Wilbur, and he's like, "Those Yanks!" And I'm not sure if he said any other words that might be bad in Australia.
I don't think so, but, like, I remember thinking this when I was a kid, that he may, like, Jack makes me think of, like, Crocodile Dundee. Mm-hmm. But, like, to be fair, I didn't know anything else about Australia except Rescuers Down Under and Crocodile Dundee.
Well, I mean, those aren't too bad ways to learn about Australia. We'll say that.
Yeah.
So, once they finally get down, we find out that Jake is also smitten with Bianca.
Like, immediately, he's like, hey, hey.
And he's immediately trying to get rid of Bernard, so that way he can move in. Because he's talking about, oh, well, we need to either take Suicide Trail or Satan's Ridge. Which do you prefer? And Bernard's like, wait, what? And he's looking at the map, and there's no names on the map, which was also kind of funny. And then later on, we cut back to Cody, who is tied up in front of a map with all these names of the different passes that Jake had just said. And yeah. McLeish is trying to figure out where the Golden Eagle's babies are, as well as the Golden Eagle. And so hilarity ensues with Jake and Bernard and Bianca having to ride a flying squirrel. And Bernard is bringing up the rear, literally, of the squirrel. And the reason that they couldn't travel was because Orville or Wilbur was hurt?
Yeah, I wasn't real clear on that. I think he got hurt landing.
Yeah, and there was a very questionable Australian doctor talking about using the spinal stretchulator, the artery router, the epidermal tissue disruptor, and I'm just scratching my head because I wouldn't be in this doctor's office if I wasn't tied up like Wilbur was either.
Right, and like the transdermal tissue whatever was a chainsaw,
yeah,
which made me laugh. Like, I mean, at one point he had like a single spur, and I was like, oh, what's this tool? And so then they like use a pulley system to lift up this giant chainsaw. I laughed at that was mm-hmm. super funny. And like, did you notice that the little nurse, well, there were multiple, I think only one of them spoke. It was the same voice for all of them, if more of them did, but it sounded just like Minnie Mouse.
I did not notice that. I did notice that they were dressed in nun's apparel, though.
Yeah, like those like old-timey-looking nurse mm-hmm. dresses. They did look suspiciously Catholic, too.
So, somehow Wilbur gets out of surgery after getting hit with not one but two tranquilizer darts from a gun that the sharpshooter nun shoots at him. And then we cut back to Cody, and there is a report on the radio of a little boy's backpack being found in the crocodile-infested waters. And they say something about another victim of a croc attack.
Yeah, that was so sad because, like, his mom just has his backpack and she thinks her son is gone. I was like, I was, like, kind of sad they showed that.
Yeah. And all during this, McLeish has a sidekick named Joanna. What was Joanna?
So, I wish I would have put it in my notes because I did look it up, and I guess I didn't put it down in my notes. I'm probably saying this wrong, but it's spelled G-O-A-N-N-A. So Goanna, maybe? Goanna?
Moana? What?
I don't know. It doesn't, like, look like it's really that big. Like she is huge. I mean, I don't think it's small, but trying to find how big they get. I wish I'd put this in my notes. Oh, the largest species can get, they are big, over 8 feet in length. But not all of them are that big. Mm. So I guess it's not out of the question that he would have this, like, giant lizard as his sidekick. But she was kind of funny.
Yeah.
Some, like, the comic relief that we get from Joanna the Goanna, I'm probably saying that wrong, was fun, I thought. She is kind of scary, though, too.
Yeah. And when I heard her speak, the very first thing that I thought of was the... Are you leaning in for this? The henchman on the Black Cauldron.
Oh, you know what? I checked that, too. Hang on.
It was Frank Welker that voiced both her and the eagle.
Yes, he was McLeish's singing voice, too, because he does sing, like, a really creepy version of Home on the Range.
Flight of the Navigator. I'm not seeing him. Huh. But he was also the voice of the Capuchin Monkey in Raiders of the Lost Ark, which is really weird.
Gremlins! Oh, my gosh. He was the voice of Stripe in Gremlins. Have you ever seen Gremlins? I know you have, right? Side note, I showed that to my family over Christmas. Keaton thought it was weird at first, but then once she was all in. And it's that's been like 5 months ago, and she's still walking around going, yum, yum.
Get more tartar. Yeah.
Wow, yeah, he's been in a lot. I didn't know his name, but yeah.
But he was not the henchman on the Black Cauldron, unfortunately. But that's what she struck me as because of the way that she was talking. But I'm a kid at heart, so what can I say?
Yeah.
Now, we did definitely need some comedic relief with this movie. We will say that. And partly was because Cody was thrown into a cage in the middle of a bunch of either endangered or very rare animals. One of it, which was the bearded dragon called Frank.
Yeah, I liked Frank.
And Frank also struck me as a kind of... He had the henchman voice vibe, now that I'm starting to think about it. But I laughed when he started trying to pick the lock with his tail.
Mm-hmm.
And then we don't know how long it actually takes, but he does it. And he's outside the cage and slams the door and then doesn't realize that he's outside. We are going very deep into the wiki.
Yeah. he just was cute.
Yeah.
All these other animals, like, we don't see them after this, do we? I kind of, like, I forgot. I don't think we really see them after he gets out of there. Spoiler alert, Cody gets out of I mean, I guess that's, like, safe to assume. But, like, he escapes, and we don't see these guys again, I don't think. And it's, like, kind of sad that we don't. Because he, like, became friends with them, and they helped him. Hopefully he frees them.
Well, yeah, let's hope that he frees them, because otherwise this is a very sad Disney movie ending.
Yeah, the kangaroo has, like, a shackle around its neck.
Mm-hmm. So, McLeish is trying to figure out how to get Cody to tell him where the Golden Eagle lives, and he ends up landing on the eggs because Joanna wants regular chicken eggs for lunch or dinner or whatever they're eating. And so he's like, yeah, I just heard a report that the eagle was killed, and I wish I would have gotten it myself, and blah, blah, blah. And so I want to go ahead and let you go because I don't have any use for you anymore, but I hope that the eggs are going to be okay.
Yeah, he, like, is so manipulative. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a good villain, but, oh, like, you just hate him. You love to hate him.
Yeah. And so Cody starts walking off towards the outcropping where the bird's nest is. And McLeish follows along in his tractor Mad Max Thunderdome style car.
Yeah, looks like it has tracks on it like a tank. Like, what the heck is this guy?
Yeah. And so Bianca and Jake and Bernard have just gotten to McLeish's hideout, and they drop down, and Bianca and Bernard almost get crushed by the treads, a la Raiders of the Last Ark, of the Lost Ark.
It probably was the last one, though, too.
It was the only one.
Yeah, that was, like, kind of scary. I don't remember this part of the movie, really, like, from seeing it as a kid, but I just thought, man, I wonder if that scared me when I was, like, 7. Because I feel like it probably would have.
And so Cody leads him right to the eagle's nest, because otherwise we wouldn't have an ending to this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then he sees the eagle flying over, and he's like, oh, good, you're alive. And right as he says that, McLeish fires a missile at the bird that has a net.
Yeah. Again, who is this guy?
And why is he not working for the Australian government with their defense systems?
He's, so, obviously he's a poacher. He's, like, got no regard for the law. Mm-hmm. Like, part of his beef with Cody is, like, that Cody's gonna tell the Rangers on him or whatever, mm-hmm. like, turn in. But then he, like, the way the rest of his stuff is all set up, I'm like, this guy is, like, a prepper or something. With his, like, weird tank vehicle and, like, his, like, missile net.
Yeah. So, he shoots the net, or he shoots the missile, which opens up to reveal a net, which captures the bird. Surprise, surprise. And Cody jumps down and starts cutting the net open with his little pygmy pocket knife, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Which Crocodile Dundee would say, that's not a knife.
Yeah, it looks like a butter knife or like one of those little toddler size knives. And this is like when McLeish is like, I'm going to get him for good. So he's like, okay, now you're murderous. Kind of borderline, but now we're fully there.
And so he brings him back up, drops him back in his little cage that's in the back of his Mad Max vehicle, which also I think is set in Australia, but and the next thing we know, Cody is tied up, and he's like, well, it'll be a shame for them to not have you actually find the body in the crocodile float. And so he starts taking target practice at the rope, and it breaks. Surprise, surprise. And Bernard has to dive in and bring Cody back up to the surface. And this was unbelievable, because how can a 3-ounce mouse bring up a 60-pound boy soaking wet, covered in ropes, by hanging on to the one little bit of the string that was in the rope and just pulling it back up and over the... But, yeah. So they get him back, and somehow, and I didn't take notes, but McLeish ends up falling into the same river that Cody is in. Mm-hmm. And he goes over the edge of the cliffs, or the waterfall, and I guess he dies?
Yeah, he's presumed dead. I don't remember how he ended up in the water. But, so one thing we kind of we skipped over was, like, right before this action sequence, McLeish is like, oh, I got what I want, because he's just captured the bird. And so he's like, Joanna's going to get what she wants. So he uses, like, a rope to lower her down to the nest so she can eat those eggs. Mm-hmm. And the eggs have been replaced with rocks. So, like, that was, I laughed so much, because I didn't, like, somewhere I had missed that they'd replaced the eggs with rocks. And so I was confused for a second, but then she's just like trying so hard and like scratching at them, and they're clearly not eggs. It made me laugh a lot. And then they get Wilbur to sit on the eggs to keep them warm, and he's like, I'm not gonna do it. And of course he does.
Yeah. And the movie ends with Cody getting taken back home, and we just hear Wilbur saying, somebody forgot about me? And then you hear an egg hatch. And he's like, no, go back in the egg. Oh, you're so sweet. Crunch. Fade to black. Because one of the birds bit his wing, finger, whatever.
Yeah. Oh, and Bernard proposes to Bianca. Finally, he's like, before anything else happens. And then he proposes. So cute. And like, Jack is like, good job. Like, he hasn't been trying to steal his girl the whole movie.
Yeah. He's like, well, I guess she should have put a ring on it.
Yeah, it's cute. She's like, of course I will. And it's, I don't know. I kind of wonder if Jack is like, look at me. I'm like handsome and strong and rugged, and she's going to marry this little weirdo. just because I know people that are like that, I guess. But they're so sweet. And he's like, good job. And, yeah, that's it.
A couple of things that I glossed over. One, the RAS was actually established in 405 BC. I'm trying to figure out who was the original author of that, because that's Greek. And if you're not looking at the chairman when they're doing the actual talking about the kid that's been kidnapped, you wouldn't see it.
Yeah, I didn't catch that at all. I had no idea.
And somewhere Wilbur throws out, oh, it was because Bianca asked if it was a nonstop flight. And Wilbur says, what do you think I am, Charles Lindbergh? And so I'm like, okay, once again, when is this movie set? Because kids today, or kids in the 90s, would be, who is Charles Lindbergh?
Right. Like, Keaton probably has never heard that. I remember, like, being curious and reading about the Lindbergh. Mm-hmm. Probably the Lindbergh baby. And I was young, but I wasn't, like... I mean, I was older than I was when this movie came out, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So, did we miss anything on your notes?
Wilbur, like, gets left behind somehow. I don't remember how, but he, like, hitches a ride on, like, a razorback.
Yeah.
That's, like, not really that big of a plot point, but, I didn't see it coming in the moment, so I was like, oh, he's riding a pig.
Yeah, and I was like, is that a warthog? It's a couple years early for The Lion King.
I was like, I didn't know they had, because I was thinking of Pumbaa, so I was like, wow, I didn't realize that those were in Australia. Like, The Lion King was in Africa. Like, I'm doing all of this, like, Disney calculus that is pointless, really, but it just also, like, showed my lack of education as far as, like, what animals originate from what lands.
Well, no, because I was thinking the same exact thing. I was like, why is there a warthog in the outback of Australia? So.
Well, we did it.
Hey.
Yeah, so at the top, you asked if this held up for me. And now, like, that I have seen the original because we talked about it, and then... Because I don't remember ever watching it as a kid. I probably did. But anyways, I didn't remember that one. But I remembered this one. And now that I've seen them both, like, within a few months of each other, I have to say, the original was so much better. Like, this wasn't a bad movie, but I just liked the first more.
Yeah, and I think it had to do with the fact that the first one was... related to a jewel heist and not so much the poaching of animals and the bad things that happened to the animals if Cody didn't lead the police or the rangers back to the animals and McLeish's hidden lair. Or does his mom ever let him out of her sight again?
Right. Well, and we don't even see him be reunited with his mom.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like, I hope he made it home. We just see him like flying away on the back of the eagle with the mice, and I guess we're just left to assume that that is what happens next.
Yeah. Trying to... Huh. Oh, okay. I actually did not know this. And I'm going off topic a little bit,
mm-hmm.
because I was trying to figure out if this was actually based on a rescuer's book. It doesn't mention this that this was actually based on a book, but it... was the first animated film sequel theatrically released by Walt Disney World, or by Walt Disney Studio. And it opened the way for a number of sequels.
That makes sense. But I did not know that. Interesting.
This movie was actually a box office bomb because it opened on the same day as Home Alone.
Oof, yeah. That would do it.
Which... surprisingly, isn't Home Alone a Disney movie?
I don't think it was originally.
Okay.
I think they acquired it. But also, John Candy is in Home Alone. So.
And they actually, they mentioned that, which also features John Candy. So, yeah, because he was in the back of the truck with Moira.
Yeah, he's like, he's the Polka King.
Yes. So, yeah. I'm... very sad that this one didn't do well, because it could have led to them actually opening up the rest of the books.
Yeah.
And then you could have gotten to see Bianca and Bernard actually get married somewhere, like in Herbie's backseat or something.
I just looked it up because I couldn't remember, but I had... it's way too detailed for me to like get into at all. But there's a really good... article about this movie on from Collider,
mm-hmm.
where they talk about like the technology that was used in this movie and how that like it was groundbreaking as a sequel, like the technology also paved the way for all the other subsequent Disney Renaissance animated movies,
which we will get to quite soon, like in the next year, as far as timeline goes. Because Beauty and the Beast is actually one. It's actually five movies away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so soon.
Yep. So, since we've picked it apart, been very saddened that George C. Scott didn't tell anyone where his animals were stored, it's time to get into the three bad questions. The first one... yes.
The three what?
The three bad questions.
I was like, did you just say what I thought you said?
The three sad questions, the three mad questions. First of all, what is today's impact on this movie? Well, if it were done today, the kid would have a cell phone, which would probably still be in his backpack, but...
yeah, they'd be tracking him one way or another. Like... they'd have more of a lead. They probably wouldn't immediately assume that he was attacked by an alligator.
Yeah, because they didn't find any bones or anything like that. But, yeah. I mentioned it when we were going over the movie, the fact that this actually incorporated computers as a way to transmit the information, I would like to see... Well, no, I probably wouldn't, because I don't trust Disney with remakes anymore.
Yeah, I know.
And you know exactly where I'm going with this, with it. Because with what they've done in the last couple of movies, I don't want to see another remake.
So, okay, let's see today's impact. In that Collider article that I mentioned, it talks about how, I want to say, like, they were wanting to include, like, people of color in the movie. But one of the producers or director or someone, like, got super ticked about that and said something pretty gross, about nobody wanting to watch that, because I think they were wanting to include, like, Australian natives. I can't think of the word.
Aborigines?
Yes. I was close. But he just completely, like, shut it down and said no. And I don't think you could get away with that today. Like, the push for inclusivity in, like, telling stories of native populations is too big. They would have to, like, Cody probably wouldn't have been white if this was made today.
Yeah. And they probably would have some kind of an accent.
Yeah. Yeah, please get that right.
Yeah, speaking of, let me go ahead and check to see who Cody is. Oh, and of course, he's the only one without a link. He's Adam Ryan, a young boy able to converse with most animals. Oh, it says the same as Penny in the first film. So, okay.
Maybe she could then.
I blocked that part of the movie out.
Yeah, I didn't remember. Like, I remember her talking to the mice. I didn't remember the rest. But, like, people have been having conversation with mice since Cinderella or Snow White.
Yeah. But the mice didn't start talking back until... Well, no, they didn't talk back in Cinderella. They just talked to each other.
Yeah, you're right. As soon as I said that, I was like, wait a minute, Kyra. Back up.
Yeah. So, second, is this mirrored in culture? Yes, because poaching still happens. It's not as prevalent, but it is still there. And with the release of Furiosa coming out this summer, it will be the Mad Max vehicles will be hitting the streets soon. Because I actually think that Mad Max was set in like 2024 or 2025. In fact, I'm going to go down that rabbit hole.
Is it really? Like, that was one that I never really paid attention to, but my dad watched a lot. He, like, loved those movies.
What year was... Oh, no. It was actually set in the 1980s. Wait. Making sense. What year is Mad Max? Okay. All right. So, Mad Max 4, which is Furiosa, is set in 2050. So, we got a few more years before people are out driving their Thunderdome vehicles, so we're fine. And the final question, which I can never question or I can never ask, does it fit into today's society? Yay!
Did it. Good job.
And now I'm going to retire that question. Now I don't have to ask.
I don't think it doesn't. But I also feel like probably, like, I wish we could see the streaming data for this movie, because I feel like it's not getting watched very much. Like, Keaton probably has never heard of this.
And see, I was thinking about actually letting T watch this, but I, having seen it fully, it's going to be a couple of years, because it's still a little dark.
Yeah.
But I don't... I wonder where you would go to actually find the streaming data for that. That's a good question.
I guess it depends on if Disney even shares it. Because, you know, like, Netflix doesn't really share theirs at all.
Yeah.
They've only released a little bit of data on certain, like, movies or that I know of. Or, like, when they say it's our number one streamed movie, like, you just have to take their word for it.
Mm-hmm. All right. So, according to Rotten Tomatoes, this movie has a 72% fresh rating and has a audience score of 68%, which is rather weird that it would be. It says Though its story is second rate, The Rescuers Down Under redeems himself with some remarkable production values, particularly its flight scenes. Yeah, that's one thing that I was very impressed by was the way that it literally flew through New York.
Yeah.
And Australia.
So one flight scene, part of a flight scene that we didn't mention, that I forgot until just now because I've had this playing in the background, is that when Wilbur is approaching the too short runway, the mechanism that stops him or slows him down is a bra that it catches him almost like a slingshot. Cause Jack is doing all of this MacGyver type things, putting together some system on the fly that will slow him down. And part of it's a bra off of a clothesline.
Yeah. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Other than that, it had good flight scenes.
I mean, it's still a good flight scene. It's funny.
Yeah. So would you rewatch it?
Probably not. I think I'd watch the original before I watch this.
Coming soon from Disney Plus, The Rescuers. No.
You confused me. I was like, three? Is there another one? I hope not.
Well, none
of the characters are alive anymore. Well, I guess some of them are, but...
Yeah. Cody.
Yeah. You know. Yeah. I wouldn't... They made a third one, I would watch it, but I don't know that I'd be too excited.
Yeah. So, like I said, I probably would wait a couple of years for T to get a little bit older, just because this is still technically their dark period. But next week's movie, speaking of dark, is White Fang.
I know, I've heard of that. I haven't seen it.
Believe it is based on another book. Please hold. It's based on a Jack London book from 1906. It's a friendship between a young Klondike gold prospector and his wolf dog.
Oh.
And the wolf dog also appeared in The Journey of Natty Gann.
I was going to say, I'm pretty sure we talked about that, but just that premise doesn't sound like I'm already like,
Yeah. Meh. I think I've got that book somewhere in one of my bookshelves, so when I get to it, if we're still doing the podcast, I will give it another Dan's library update. So, you know your homework. Go out, watch White Fang, the 1991 film. I didn't know there was another film, but it says White Fang 1991 film. Oh, well, I guess it's because they don't want to confuse you with the book.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hang on. There was a 1925 silent film based on the novel. Ooh. And a 1936 film, actually. And then an Italian in 1973. So that book has been made into several movies. But the most important one is the one that came out in America in the 90s.
Starring Ethan Hawke of Moon Knight. Kyra's wait, I might have to watch it now.
And I'm like, now if I know Ethan Hawke is in it, then I'm a little more interested.
Okay. Well, if Rescuers Down Under is your favorite movie, please write us. Tell us why. Tell us what we missed in this movie that made it your favorite movie. If this is your first episode listening to us, which it is possible, we have had some new listeners lately. Welcome. Stick around. We have a 3.5 year backlog of episodes that you can listen to. Come back next week to listen to us pick apart White Fang. And until we talk again, as we always do, we tell you to stay safe, stay hungry, and stay out of rivers that have crocodiles in them.
I can't make fun of that. It's good advice.
We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening. You can send us feedback at bekindrewinddmp@gmail.com. We welcome any kind of feedback, and it might get read on the air in a future podcast. Once again, the email address is bekindrewinddmp@gmail.com. If you have a moment, please rate and review our podcast on whatever streaming service you are listening to us on. This and word of mouth are the two ways to help us reach a larger audience. Thank you in advance for doing this. Thank you again for listening, and we hope you have a great day. Goodbye.
You ready?
For the movie or for Taylor Swift's new album?